Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. It's been a head-spinning week in Kyrgyzstan, as such that within days, a prisoner, widely reported as a convicted kidnapper, gets freed by protesters from jail. Charges are dropped, gets appointed as a prime minister, and now also trusted the rule of the acting president. We are talking about Sadr Japarov, who is seen yesterday on the October 15 bragging in public, saying all power is in my hand from now on. Now, many wonders, now that he has all the powers, what he does with it. Also, many wonders about R. What does it mean for Kyrgyzstan? Where he wants to take the country? What do his previous records tell us about what's next for the country and the fabric of this volatile nation? And also, there are a lot in the pipeline in terms of the elections and many other issues in Kyrgyzstan. So to discuss all these, I'm joined by Shirin Aitmatova, former member of parliament and founder of an anti-corruption organization, Umut 2020. She's joining us from Bishkek. Akilay Karim, a social activist based in the southern Kyrgyz province of Osh. Aruka Urankizi, Kyrgyz journalist currently based in St. Petersburg, Russia. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. And Bruce is joining us from Prague, Czech Republic. Thank you very much for joining us on this important conversation. So, Shirin, let me start with you. You are on the ground in Bishkek. Tell us what's happening as we speak.
So today we have heard of new appointments in the government, and some of these appointments are quite surprising. Mm-hmm. I see, from what I can gather, I can see that Sadr Japarov is consolidating all the power in his hands, potentially because his path to power has been very difficult. He has lost his son and his parents, I believe, and he was a political prisoner for a long time. And therefore, you can see in his decisions that he trusts basically no one except for those who stuck by him throughout these ordeals. It is normal to leave prison as a psychologically maimed person when you distrust anyone. But from the appointments that he has made, I can say that he should think about more professional, more capable people to lead the country out of post-COVID economic crisis on top of the, you know, crisis after the protests.
No, Shirin, I
see that that there are very little professionals in the government,
and this is quite
worrying.
Yeah, we are going to talk about that. I mean, the appointments that you have mentioned, Shirin, you know, there are a lot to talk about his personality, about the direction he might take going forward. But for now, I think the emergency being lifted. So is there anything happening on the streets in Bishkek?
Not that I have heard of, but that doesn't mean that it's not going on. This is Kyrgyzstan. So, yeah, so I think, you know, we have these groups that protect the city and, you know, different kind of buildings. These are groups that are formations of volunteer, you know.
Are they still there?
They are always on alert.
You mean they are still there on the streets? I mean, those groups, the volunteers that we've been talking about?
They mobilize very quickly via social networks and WhatsApp and other kind of applications.
Akilay, you are in southern Kyrgyzstan in Osh. Osh has been active when all these developments were taking place in Bishkek. How's the situation out there?
I mean, the situation is not that quite tense in Osh right now, because I think the ups and downs in Osh were due to the uncertainty in Bishkek. So that's why Osh was also under the ups and downs. And now we understand, now we actually realize that these were the attempts of replacing the existing mayor's office. Mm. And there were some attempts from the existing political powers that actually are represented in the parliament. Mm-hmm. So they came down to Osh and they tried to occupy the office, and they actually did it. But then it happened on 6th of October, it happened in Osh, and then it quickly changed because the situation in Bishkek stabilized in the way that so the government, the existing government, it kind of, you know, took over the power back, and the same happened in the regions, and Osh is one of them. So right now the situation is that we have the mayor is back to his office, and we also have the local council, and the tricky situation happened with our local council that on 6th of October, they ousted the mayor from the office, saying that the mayor is no longer trusted by the local council. And there were 31 council members who actually signed that. And then when the mayor came back to the office, he actually gathered those local council members, and but not all of them, because what we've heard is that some of the members, they being scared of their revenge, they fled away to Bishkek from Osh. And also we have to take into consideration one more power that have appeared recently due to this events on 5th of October in Bishkek. So this is the return of the ex-mayor of Osh. So it's really...
So what he's doing now, uncertain. Mirza Akhmat, what he's
so
doing?
So it's really uncertain, because from what we know from the journalist interviews, he said, I'm just here for... with the mission to moderate the conflict. I'm not pretending to anything. I don't have any political ambitions. I'm not going to parliament, and don't expect me to see during the elections. And he said, like, once the conflict is over, I'm ready to leave back to Turkey. But at the same time, what we've heard from rumors from the people that his team is in good relations with some of the journalists, etc., they say that it's no longer truth, because Mr. Mirzakhmatov is planning to run to parliament, and he is right now working on gathering the names of the people that he's actually gathering for political elections. So this is it for Osh. So far, so good. But I have to say that once Mirzakhmatov was back in Osh, there were rumors that, again, this conflict could emerge between Kyrgyz and Uzbek. The ethnic Kyrgyz would attack Uzbek properties and mahallas, the communities of Uzbek people. But thank God it never happened.
It never happened.
We are back to our normal life.
Okay. Going back to Bishkek, Aruka, you are following this from 10,000 feet above, as we do. As Akhilai was saying, things seem to be calm in Osh. So what do you relate this calmness? It appears, as Shirin was talking about, protests are not taking place anymore. People not are on the streets and marching. I mean, what do you relate this calmness to? I mean, what happened to all the other activists who are protesting on this or the other person's behalf? What happened to those, and how you see this calmness?
I think what we're witnessing right now in Kyrgyzstan is unexpected chain of events. This is the first thing. And Kyrgyzstan's political landscape is highly fragmented. So with most political parties serving as a vehicle to powerful people's interests, right now people are trying to make sense of what is happening, of what kind of changes the political landscape in Kyrgyzstan are facing. And even though the current elections were categorized as vote buying, so the allegations were made against Mekinim Kyrgyzstan and other parties who are related with the corruption, people are questioning whether this revolution was worth it or not. And on the meanwhile, the researchers and journalists are also trying to create the parallels between the 2005 and 2010 events. Are there analogous, and what is the link between the 2020 events that we're facing and that we're witnessing right now? And what made clear to the research arena is that the previous revolutions created a kind of space for organized criminals to play an influential role, whether you call it from running protection or extortion of rackets or engineering elections, or whether you call it a political clientism. It seems that certain criminal allies or blackmail and the criminal so-called underworld strict code are very much linked to the Kyrgyz political figures, because having an individual who was in a prison a week ago and right now serving as a prime minister and a president in the country is something very confusing for the nation. It's something very confusing for the international observers, and it's obviously confusing for the international actors who are trying to make sense of what is happening. So I don't know if you would call it as a calmness. I think it's probably a shock for most of the Kyrgyz people. And definitely local political scientists call the protest or the riots of the October 5 and 6, they interpret it differently. Some call it a coup, some call it a revolution, some label it as unfinished revolution. So, but they agree in one thing, that the events after the demonstrations plunged in Kyrgyzstan into this political crisis actually split the society into two camps, those who are right now celebrating the new prime ministers and those who believe that their revolution has lost. So what definitely we can observe is right now there is massive group of youth who see this revolution as unfinished, but as a revolution of hope.
Then where and are they? Where are they, Aruka? I mean, as we speak, Shirin is saying that there is no one practically on the street, like the type of people who are part of this coup or revolution or this change, whatever you call that. I mean, where are they, those youth who are really leading this?
Yes. So from my perspective is there is this group of youth who are very much unsatisfied with the revolution. They see that the revolution has been stolen with different actors, whether you call it a criminal actor, whether you call it political actors, but this revolution has been stolen. But they see this as a hope, and they see this as something that at least triggered something in the minds of Kyrgyz people, that this is something that will be a change, not now, but maybe in the future. And this is something that definitely Kyrgyz youth is questioning right now, maybe in a silence, maybe in a very different way, maybe not in the streets, but this is something that has triggered a lot of youth and who are questioning what is happening with the political scenery at the moment.
Right. Thank you very much, Aruka. I know there are lots of questions about Japara, but I'm slotting the entire segment in the next half of the show to him. So let's hold our thoughts about Japara to that segment. To Bruce, of course, you might have something to add into what we have been talking about so far, but also President, I should call former President now, former President Jean Merkab. It was interesting the way he decided to step aside. He sounded like a statesman when he was saying, like, peace is more important than any post. How do you interpret the way he acted in all this?
Well, he wasn't very active or present when he was the president. So I guess I'm kind of not surprised. I mean, that was a face-saving way of getting out by saying, you know, I left, but I'm not the one that ordered troops to fire on citizens. I wouldn't do it. You know, he was playing for time from the start. I mean, he signaled early on that he was ready to go, if that's what it was going to take, you know, and he said he would go as soon as he would go within 3 days. He would go when a new government was formed, you know, and even after, you know, as of yesterday or 2 days ago anyway, when it was clear that they were going to form a new government and pick a prime minister, then he once again said, you know, well, I'm counting on the international community to help me out with this one. So, you know, it's hard to say who would leave voluntarily, I suppose. But you know, especially Bruce,
just the one point there. So when he was saying peace is more important than post, yeah, sure it is. But what really he was trying to say there, I mean, there were consequences if he did not step down?
I have no idea what authority he was actually able to muster in the last 10 days. You know, somebody ordered the military into the Capitol last Friday, for instance, that you would imagine that would have been his call if the military still recognized him as the leader. He could, you know, but Kyiv in 2010 told him to fire on the protesters, and they did. And we see what the Kyiv situation is now. He's been tried and convicted in absentia of a bunch of crimes, Kyrgyzstan related to that. Now, you know, so Jan Bekov, I think it was Kanat Isayev, who the speaker, said that he didn't see any reason for Jan Bekov to leave. And that might have been part of the deal when Jan Bekov was finally figured out his time was done, was that he didn't want to flee the country or was not able to. He didn't know who would take him. And so he tried to get the best deal he could with the understanding that he's going to stay in the country and he doesn't want to end up in jail like his predecessor did.
Interesting. Shirin, I guess people who were freed at the same time when Jabarov did, like Atambayev, Isakov, I guess they are back in their cells?
Yes, I guess so. And the court has also decided that my husband, who was also freed during that day, that he also needs to go back to prison. So
I guess that happened today, right?
Double standards, yes. But to be objective, we have to go back to the first kind of message that Japarov sent to the people, that political repressions have to be stopped in Kyrgyzstan. And from what I have heard, there was a kind of struggle between the former president and Sadr Japarov in terms of exerting power over the court system. And despite the fact that Sadr Japarov launched this new idea of political repressions as not being a part of the political landscape anymore, the judges kept sending people back to prison, you know, the same political prisoners that were freed. And supposedly that was kind of small version of sabotage of the court system. And this was kind of their reaction to Sadr Japarov.
So what about the other political figures, pro-government and opposition, who was with or against Japarov during the protest? What are they doing and what are they saying about the current realities of the country?
Well, we have to go back to the question of whether this was a revolution. And
so you think it was not?
What role did all these young people play in, changing the power system? I think that we gave away our own revolution, because when it happened, well, it was quite unexpected that, you know, Kyrgyzstan is this very volatile country. We've already had three coups or three revolutions. I'm not sure how to call them anymore. But people mobilized very quickly. It's a small country and, you know, the national character is very fiery. So
what you are saying, it was not a revolution?
The young people, they wanted everything to be done by law so that everything is within kind of the legal framework. But revolution is not a part of the legal system. Right. And what Japarov did is what revolutionaries do. They take the power, they seize it, and they change something. But we were too mild and we were too soft, and we gave back the decision-making back to parliament. And this is what it brought to. It's quite catastrophic, but, you know, we need to see something positive in it too. So it's a lesson for young people. You know, Marxism and Leninism courses are over in post-Soviet countries. So a lot of these kids, they haven't read Lenin, basically. Right. But the former generation, they still have that knowledge, you know, right, how to do these things.
Maybe, Bruce, you might have something to add into this. I mean, I was just wondering, those member of parliaments from STPK, for example, who was once with the Atambayev, then switched the sides, then joined Jeenbekov, where those type of people are standing, in which equation they are standing now, as things have completely changed, I don't know to which direction, but what are they doing? What are they saying?
Well, you know, there was obviously the STPK split. Right. The ones that were loyal to Jeenbekov are probably keeping a pretty low profile at the moment, I would imagine. Now, the ones that were loyal to Atambayev, you know, that's different. It didn't very strange. He was out. He was on the main square last Friday, you know, and he seemed to be trying to seize on the opposition's moment. And by the opposition, I mean the people that actually did do the protesting that against the election results, right? But that was broken up. And of course, he was one of the ones that went back in prison. It looked for all the world because he was potentially someone who could unite an opposition to Japarov and people like that. At least that's what it looked like. Him and Babanov were standing on stage together.
You remember the, I'm just adding one thing, Bruce, in support of what you are saying. You know, remember the last podcast we had, I don't know, one of the speakers were saying, like, you know, we are supporting Atambayev and Babanov coalition at the moment, not because they are good people, because the alternative is very bad. So, yeah.
Yeah, right. And pointing out also that they were the old guard, and that wasn't what the young protests were all about. But since he got thrown back in prison, I mean, it's really unclear if they're going to let him out on house arrest or not, but he's totally changed. He's looking at this as something that got rid of the Jeenbekov family, right? So at least that's what he's saying, is you know, thank you guys for coming in, getting rid of the Jeenbekov clan. And I don't know if that's a move to try to save himself from going back to prison, what the deal is, but that was the last thing I saw. And some of the other members, you know, loyalists, his loyalists, have been kind of echoing the same comments of, like, you know, oh, okay, this government actually got rid of the bad Jeenbekov government. So they must be good guys, or at least better guys than the Jeenbekov clan was. So
now on Japarov, now that he has all the power, as he says, so what he plans to do with it and what it means for Kyrgyzstan and what comes next for the country. Let's continue the conversation talking about this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Shirin Aitmatova, former member of parliament and founder of an anti-corruption organization, Umut 2020. She's joining us from Bishkek. Akilay Karim, a social activist based in southern Kyrgyz province of Osh. Aruka Urankizi, Kyrgyz journalist, currently joining us from St. Petersburg, Russia. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties media manager in host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. We are discussing Kyrgyzstan and the head-spinning developments the country has gone through over the couple of days. So let's start with Sadir Japarov, as I promised. Did you expect, Oruka, that he will emerge from all this the way he did?
Honestly, no. And I don't know if there's anyone who actually was expecting this kind of turn of events, because we are talking about an individual, a former MP, and who is a fervent nationalist, who's a convicted kidnapper, and who widely said to have close links to organized crime groups. And right now, Japarov declared himself as an acting president. So when we look at him as a persona, he almost no experience in any kind of government. Like, no finds himself taking over a country of currently what Kyrgyzstan is facing within the economic collapse post-COVID-19 situation. People are trying to regulate their daily economic situation, but it seems that it has been compounded with the revolution. And Japarov's supporters include colleagues in Mekenchil Party, who also a fellow countryman and a youth from all regions in Kyrgyzstan. And the ideology of these parties, like of Japarov himself, is nationalism. And in its electoral program, the party and he himself promised voters that they will nationalize the Kumtor gold mine in Issyk-Kul region in the northern Kyrgyzstan. So that was one of the main reasons why so many people were supporting him, because the statement he made that if this Kumtor will be nationalized, every Kyrgyz actually will be a millionaire if natural resources are given in the hands of the people. That was the statement that was very bold and drove nationalistic strife in Kyrgyz people. That is the one thing that I think we have to put up there.
Aruka, is he still talking about those things, like speaking in nationalistic tones as now he is prime minister and the president?
I think we have to observe it by time, because that was the main reason how he emerged, if we see the pre-emergence state of Japarov. But for now, we know very little about him. We know much about him. It's something very blurred in the landscape, in the political landscape. Mm-hmm. So this will be something to be observed.
Mm-hmm. Aruka, thank you very much for this. Shirin, do you like to jump in here? I mean, where do you see Japarov standing politically? I mean, we are trying to understand the direction he might take going forward.
Well, I actually started out in the same commission together with Sadir Japarov, commission on corruption related to Kumtor Mining Company. And since then, he has become a political prisoner and a convicted kidnapper, according to some. The thing is, in Kyrgyz politics, the question of nationalism has been brewing for a very long time. Mm. I mean, the fact that this is a successful strategy and that people support this kind of message, I think this means that society has space for this kind of discourse, and we have to accept it. And in lots of different countries in the world, nationalism is raising kind of its head again. Mm. And it's a global phenomenon currently. And generally, I think the world is changing. And I think Aruka is completely right. No one expected that Japarov would be the leader at the end of these protests.
So where his name popped up? Where his name popped up in during these?
So you know, there has always been a lot of support for Sadir Japarov amongst kind of common folk, let's say.
But he was just a former MPA, right? I mean, did he had any other title other than being a former member of parliament?
Yeah, but the thing is, you see, Kyrgyz people, they don't read election programs, party programs, you know, they don't really care about so much about debates. They want a hero. They want a leader. And this guy is kind of a representation of political martyrdom.
How so?
He encompasses these kind of characteristics that Kyrgyz people attribute to strong people, to a strong leader. And in fact, maybe there is a contrast with the kind of meeker, milder former president. So this is just a reaction to a president who kept silent most of the time. In moments of conflict, he was always neutral and always backstage. Mm. And Kyrgyz people demanded someone who goes front stage and deals with these issues.
Mm. Interesting. Akilay, is he known where you are, like in Osh? I mean, how he's known, if he's known?
He's well known because I think it's mostly due to the political leaders in the south. Hmm. So let's take Tashif, let's take Mirzakhmatov. These people are they used to be, you know, in one political front before the ruling of Atambayev, and they are perceived as truly Kyrgyz man by common folk. And the same goes with Mirzakhmatov, the same goes with Tashiev, even though their reputation is quite, you know, the big question. But in general, they are perceived as Kyrgyz men that, let's say, Atambayev oppressed them, being jealous that they gained such a big reputation. They gained the hearts and minds of Kyrgyz people in rural areas. Okay. So that's why what we have in the square of Osh on 6th and 7th of October, the people who were supporting Mirzakhmatov so much in Osh, at the same time they were supporting Sadir Japarov, and they were saying, like, we do want Sadir and Mirzakhmatov to be in a union, so that Sadir would be ruling in this, in northern Kyrgyzstan and Mirzakhmatov would be ruling in southern Kyrgyzstan. And what's interesting is that when Mirzakhmatov popped up in the square in early AMs in front of like 5,000 of people, mostly, by the way, male, coming from areas outskirts, and he was saying that, you know, I'm here because Japarov and those people in Bishkek, they asked me to come and they asked me to support them, and I would be in charge of Osh, Batken and Jalalabad, like the whole southern Kyrgyzstan. So this is what we have. And I would also add on Japarov that not just the common citizens never expected that Japarov one day will be the prime minister and all the power would gather in his hands. Also, I think, I'm sure that he was not even thinking of that too. I mean, I would say it, and by the way, how he was answering to the questions of many deputies and the journalists. They were the questions about the COVID response. They were the questions about the prime minister's cabinet, like would he have any changes in the cabinet? He could not answer any question concretely, precisely. He could, he actually didn't have any answers to that. So that means that if he would be expecting that one day, like pretty soon, he would be going out from the jail. So maybe he would be having any kind of plans and, you know, he would be planning and he would be having at least the answers to these basic questions. But what we've seen is that he was answering was very general and it was very vague answers like, well, we'll see. Mm. Well, just give me the power and you'll see, you know. So that's why we believe that he's the person who actually, he himself didn't know what was happening around him.
Interesting. Aruka, Akilay was talking about the reputation, the way he's known among some segment of the society. I'm talking about Jabarov as a Kyrgyz man. I mean, why he among all the other Kyrgyz men? Why everything just turned out the way it did to him?
So here I would agree with Shirin in a case that people are seeking for a hero. And during the protest, during the revolution that night, 11 politicians were released from custody. Mm. But Japarov was the only one who immediately went to the main square to speak in front of protests, to make certain statements regarding whether he called nationalization or the new system, that new, we want to see new people, and especially this the discourse of the new was very much invested in his speech, in his discourse. And thanks to this, unexpectedly for most of protesters, he became one of the leaders of the protests. Mm. And chanting his name, and supporters put forward a new demand that Japarov should become a new president, or at least he needs to become a prime minister. And while we were reading the certain reports, there was this analysis of the Kyrgyz social media, which during the protest, there were main three trends happening in the Kyrgyz social media. First one was the glorification of Japarov. The second was longstanding this anti-establishment rhetoric. And the third was, you know, attacks on the Japarov's rivals. So these three main discourse actually, in a certain way, created some kind of an image of Japarov and what people want to see in the leader, and what people want to see. The boldness, the character, the bravery, and that was portrayed. Mm. So the main online media platform groups like WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, titled after his name. And right now he has like thousands of followers. I think more than 600 followers. Correct me if I'm wrong. And
it will change. It will change by the time we will air this podcast anyways.
Most probably it will. And so that was the online electoral campaign to a certain extent created this fan pages and glorified the image of Japarov that I think unexpectedly just changed the chain of events for the last few days.
So how to read this? I mean, this, all these teams coming together, social media teams and other people in support of him. I mean, how this happened? Was there any kind of advanced preparation for anything like this?
That's very difficult to answer, to be honest. And I don't know if there's any from the panelists here will be willing to go with that question. As Akalai said, he himself didn't know that this will turn out in a certain way.
Interesting.
So maybe from my side, it has seen something that actually organically created a kind of an image. And that was just a gathering of certain dynamics and creating coalitions and, you know, seeing the power dynamics and how it shifted by time. So maybe that is the case. But again, if there's anyone willing to answer that question, that would be great.
Let's see what Bruce, you have to say about him, especially about this topic. And also adding to that is, I mean, his this very intriguing remarks about all power being in his hand, to what he was trying to say, why he was saying that. Let's start with the previous question. I mean, how this has happened? I mean, how it turned out the way it did for Japarov, and how you interpret all this apparently organization, a coalition, who immediately rallied behind him?
Well, I just find it very hard to believe that anyone could have planned this in advance of the elections. No one could have known that the announcement of the election results would provoke the kind of protests it did. So I kind of dismiss that as a possibility. Someone obviously was very savvy with social media and had probably been using social media for pretty much the same purposes that it ended up serving Japarov, you know, to try to play up someone's image, trash somebody else's image, something like that. And once things started going, some group, individual, understood that if he wanted to carry the moment and get his own people up there, he needed to first go to these people that did social media and were already doing essentially what he wanted them to do for this particular guy, Japarov. You know, I read the article also. It was really good. And but I don't remember that they had a time frame for any of this, for when it started to appear. But I was questioning all the time. I'm like, where is this guy getting his support exactly? I don't understand. When he was jailed, when he was being tried for hostage taking, he did have supporters outside the courtroom, but we're talking about a few hundred people.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, the natural conclusion, given Kyrgyzstan's history, when you see a big group of, you know, of young men out there, is that they're being paid. But there was too many people for that.
Yeah.
You know, someone must have had a lot of money to get them all out there. So when the article came out and started to explain that the social media networks had just exploded and, you know, their viewership had gone up 5-6 times to what it normally was. All of a sudden, then you had to figure that someone who knew about the social networks and knew the people that were on them and could do exactly what they wanted, they contacted and said, "This is our guy. Put all your effort into playing him up, trashing his opponents, potential opponents, right. So that people get the idea. Because Patriot, you know, I was glad to hear Akalai said that they know who he is in the South because of who he associates with. Mm. That's one of the keys to this whole thing. He himself is from the northeastern Issyk-Kul province. He had support as a guy who wanted the nationalization of the local gold mine. He didn't speak out on a lot of different political matters. Mm. And yes, he was a deputy from 2005 to 2007 when Parliament was dissolved. Mm. He came back as an advisor to President Bakiyev. He got thrown out, and then he was elected again as a deputy in 2010. But by 2012, he was with Tashiev, who we already just heard about, and they were staging a protest outside the Parliament building, and they tried to storm the building, and they all were arrested and convicted of trying to overthrow the government. Hmm. So he was no longer a deputy by that point. So he had 2 years of experience in Parliament in 2005 to 2007, and 2 years from 2010 to 2012. Mm. You know, come on. And he came up with this plan all by himself. I mean, I always looked at him as a distraction. He's, you know, he's either going to go along with what's happening, or he's there because the New York Times writes headlines that, you know, kidnapper becomes prime minister.
Yeah.
Okay, now when you remove kidnapper as prime minister later, Kyrgyzstan looks really good. And who steps into his place?
Why you said that, Bruce? And this theory, he might be a distraction.
I don't believe that he has any part in what he's been in contact with people since he got out of prison about what his role is. But like I said, it's impossible for me to believe that he planned this. You know, I just don't see how he could not have known he was going to get out of prison. You know, and like I said, he's not. Kamchibek Tashiev is a well-known figure in Kyrgyzstan all over the country for a lot of reasons. You know, you would think that if you were going to put your most popular, well-known person up there, it would be somebody like him. Now, why you pick Japarov, you know, who's known? But like I said, he doesn't have anywhere near the reputation as you know, Tashiev has, for instance. So, you know, I can't understand why him, unless, like I said, he's willing to follow orders all the time, and so, they're confident, whoever's sponsoring him is confident in his loyalty.
So on that, Bruce, you named Kamchibek Tashiev. I mean, he's just been appointed as the, what's that, national security chief, right? Is it, it's what called in Kyrgyzstan?
State National Security Committee.
Yeah. So does this resolve any of the puzzle that you are trying to understand here in terms of who might be in the driving seat here and who is just pretending to be?
Well, I wouldn't want to lay that on Tashiev, but I mean, you know, like I said, they hung around together in the past. Tashiev was on Japan's side from the start, and I figured that was because they knew each other for a long time. They're Bakiyev boys. They're both pro Bakiyev boys. You know, and so. But of the two of them, Tashiev is far better known than Japarov. Noah Tashiev, he's created two different political parties. You know, so and he was in a union with Babanov's party for the 2015 elections. Mm. Out there in public a lot. He's made a lot of headlines. Mm. You know, so like I said, he would seem to be the obvious choice. Is he the one pulling the strings? Probably not. But closer to the person pulling the strings than Japarov is.
Maybe the people that he's appointing might give us some clue. And earlier, Shirin, you were talking about these appointments, kind of very questionable, as the way you put it. Who he's appointing in what kind of appointments that we are seeing now? I mean, who are they?
Well, I want to go back to the whole like convicted kidnapper story and his kind of odious reputation.
Shirin. Very briefly, we need to move on. Really, I mean, I understand.
In fact, I was standing by Sadr Japarov together with Natalia Nikitenko while the peaceful rally that they were holding went out of control, and Tashiev decided to storm the White House, the Parliament building. So he was wrongfully convicted for this because when things got out of control, he tried to stop it. And then he was inside the building when all of this went out of control and Tashiev kind of decided to storm the building. Mm. So we have to remember that Kyrgyzstan does not have a judicial system like, you know, Europe or the United States. Anyone can become a convict, as I have experienced through my own experiences with these, you know, court cases with my husband. Mm. And so it's a little bit unfair. Hmm. Regarding the kidnapping, I have no information. I can't say anything about that. But these chaotic Kyrgyz protests, they often get out of control, and not because the head of the protest decided that this was the route to follow, because people are just very aggressive, and you know, they do these things without being told. But I think that lots of journalists have commented on the fact that former kind of Matraimov social network people, they have been noticed as kind of taking Sabir Japarov's side now and promoting him. So, I mean, I'm a little bit doubtful. What is the link? Is it true that, you know, the people who are ousted, the people, the Matraimov clan that brought the country to these protests, who have usurped all the power in the country, are they hiding behind him? Is he a front? This is a question that we need to ask.
On that, Shirin, I was just reading the Tashiev's first press statement, in which he was saying, like, if Matraimovs are in the country, he will give order to get him arrested. I mean, it doesn't look like they are on the same page.
Well, Sadr Japarov actually said that Matraimov will be jailed. And then a couple of days later, one of the younger Matraimovs was released under house arrest. And
interesting.
But the court decides that, you know, my husband needs to be in prison. So there is a kind of duality that we need to address. This is not something that we can ignore.
Right. Yeah. But unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion. We are just getting way out of time. But we tried to understand his personality. And also, of course, it's been just a few days, but as much as we know about Japarov, is there anything that tells us about his priorities so far, looking into his appointments, looking into what he is saying in public?
I think he has appointed all these people whom he trusts in an effort to save his grip on power. I don't think he's thinking right now. He's just trying to kind of hold on to it, because he's still a little shaky. You know, in Kyrgyzstan, things can change in 2 hours, three hours.
Does those appointments tell you, I mean, where he wants to take the country?
Well, supposedly we're going to have parliamentary elections, repeat elections. So a new government will be formed shortly. But maybe this is kind of just a way to, you know, survive until the elections. Maybe, because otherwise I'm not really following the logic here.
Aruka, is it the way you see it? I mean, very briefly, please.
Yes, I would definitely agree. I don't think right now he has any kind of strategy to govern the country, to economically uphill the situation. Right now, the only thing that he's concerned right now is how to hold into power and basically create a strong network within the parliament that would support him during this process of power transition.
Of course, the election is something in the immediate future, I guess. Is there anything else we are looking when we... let me put it in this way. Akhilai, but what are the things that you will be watching going forward to happen in Kyrgyzstan until the elections?
Well, you know, I think the government, the new government, they will be heading to two priorities. So the first priority is about the COVID response. I mean, the numbers are raising, and horrifically they're raising, and there is no actually response from the government. Where, I mean, the both hospitals that were supposed to be finished by the second wave, they're still under the construction. So this is the first, and people, let's not forget how people were angry with the COVID response of the government. Then the second priority is about the international image that this government has gained. So I think this is kind of a headache that they have to deal with, because as we've seen, the international press and the international government, including the strategic so-called partner Russia, they have told that the Kremlin announced that they are actually freezing all the supporting funds to Kyrgyzstan. So that means a lot. I mean, and this is a big deal for them. I mean, especially with Russia. And I think that they will be actually focused on their relations with neighbors, first of all, with Central Asian states. And they will not be going too far, understanding that actually the image is not that promising.
Okay, let me treat this as my final question, with the expectation of brief answers from each of you. Bruce, Akhilai also touched on Russian angle here. And looking into the future steps that that Japarov might be taking, where Russia comes into play in this? I mean, is there any role that Russia is already playing, or are you expecting any role Russia to play going forward? I mean, in terms of the steps that the country has to go before or during the election?
Well, Putin already sent his deputy chief of staff out there to meet with Japarov and Jeyenbekov a couple of days ago. You know, again, this question keeps coming up. You know, what about Russia? What about China? And I think at the end of the day, you know, there's no reason for them for either Russia or China to get involved in this. You know, Russia wants stability in Kyrgyzstan. That's true. But whoever comes out on top, whoever wins in this thing, they're still going to have to come to Russia sooner or later. That you can't escape that influence at the moment. So, you know, it's really like a no lose for Russia.
Right. Okay, Aruka, where your eyes will be going forward to determine where the country is headed? Very briefly, if you can.
Well, I would agree with Bruce that, well, Russia is an important economic and strategic partner for Kyrgyzstan right now. That is undeniable in this picture. And framing these protests and the backlash in purely geopolitical terms is misplaced, definitely. So these uprisings, the problems that we're facing in Kyrgyzstan is completely internal dynamics, and it's nothing really to do with international ones. And like looking at Russia and see and just wait, what will Russia do is something doesn't really make sense at this point, because Russia will be just looking at strategically creating new efforts to build a new relationship with the new government. That is the thing. For the future, well, elections could take place on December 20. The definite decisions will most probably make, I think, next week, or maybe it has already been. So at this point, it is impossible to predict what the new election rules might look like. And I think what we will have to be observing as journalists and researchers is how the Central Electoral Commission will be managing this new elections. Will there be any, again, vote buying from participating, given that these parties were already backed by the country's most powerful politicians? And we will be seeing the whole episode of the elections and see if there's any kind of, again, internal intervention from the different groups that are not really in the scenery.
Okay. Last point from you, Shireen. So just a simple question. Where your eyes will be, where you will be watching to determine where things are headed going forward?
Well, this is the first president, right, who hasn't been supported by the Russian Federation, right?
We don't know.
Well, if they're saying that Russia is going to stop kind of aid to Kyrgyzstan, then we have to accept that Russia is not really pleased with the outcome, and it's understandable. This is very surprising, and they weren't ready, and they didn't have a choice. This is the first time that Russia didn't give a blessing, right? So potentially this is a good thing, because we are a post-colonial society, and we are coming out of this kind of, this is a transitional period. That is why there is a kind of flourishing of nationalism. And maybe this is something that we need to go through. I'm not sure whether this is going to be a good thing or a bad thing in the end. I mean, most political developments lead into kind of further problems ahead, but this is the first Kyrgyz president who answers to all journalists in Kyrgyz language, right? All his statements are made in Kyrgyz language. This is, I think this is a good thing for our national character and for our national spirit, as long as it stays kind of in the positive, constructive shape. But we need to also address the issue of human rights. If human rights, together with corruption, together with nepotism, if all of these things stay, nothing will be resolved. And I think that this chain of kind of political repressions from one government to another, this has caused this kind of the decay of the societal fabric. And this is what we have as a result. Repressions create only more repressions. And if he is able to stop this kind of vicious cycle and build national character, maybe we have a chance.
Let's see, you know, the way things stand, I mean, he is there only for a couple of months, right, until the election. So let's see. Bruce, is there anything you want to add just as a final comment?
Keeping on with statements about possible amendments to the Constitution to make it a pro-presidential state. That would be it.
Okay, with this, unfortunately, we have to conclude the conversation right here. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Freedom for Your Freedom Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Shirin Aitmatova, former member of parliament and founder of an anti-corruption organization, Umut 2020. Akilay Karim, a social activist based in southern Kyrgyz province of Osh. Aruka Urankizi, journalist, currently in St. Petersburg, Russia. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time in TARDIS today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Your Freedom Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.